And I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 24th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MPD's Racial Profiling Report Takeaways. Midland City Council learned that the Midland Police Department is fully in compliance with Texas law. By Stuart Doreen. On Tuesday, the Midland City Council learned that the Midland Police Department is fully in compliance with Texas law pertaining to a policy prohibiting racial profiling, officer training and education in racial profiling, the racial profiling complaint process and public education about the complaint process, the collection of racial profiling data. Council members also learned race was known 0.2% of the time prior to a stop, and there were no complaints of racial profiling in 2022. The racial profiling analysis was presented to the Midland City Council during its briefing session. The data used was based on 22,583 motor vehicle stops in which a ticket, citation, or warning was issued, including an arrest made, in 2022. The following are takeaways from the report. Population numbers. Population is based on 2020 census statistics from the City of Midland, Midland County, and Martin County. The report showed that whites make up 44.86% of the population inside the City of Midland, 45% inside Midland County, and 53% inside Martin County. Blacks make up 7.48% of the population inside the City of Midland, 6.16% inside Midland County, and 1.55% inside Martin County. Hispanics make up 41.62% of the population inside the City of Midland, 43.14% inside Midland County, and 53.08% inside Martin County. Lastly, Asians make up 2.58% of the population inside the City of Midland, 2.29% inside Midland County, and 0.17% inside Martin County. Percentage of stops compared to benchmarks. Whites constituted 36.18% of all drivers stopped. Blacks constituted 12.71% of all drivers stopped. Hispanics constituted 50.06% of all drivers stopped. And Asians made up 0.9% of all drivers stopped. Traffic stop outcomes. Of the 22,583 stops, 66.86% were men. 65.38% of the stops were for a moving violation. 63.32% were given a verbal warning. 1,403, 6.21%, resulted in arrests. And 25.11% resulted in physical force, resulting in bodily injury being used. Who received verbal warnings? Data shows percentages of the 14,301 receiving verbal warnings included whites in 64% of stops made, blacks 68%, Hispanics 62%, and Asians 61%. Who received citations? Data shows percentages of the 4,547 receiving citations included whites in 18% of stops made, blacks 15%, Hispanics 23%, and Asians 20%. Who received written warnings? Data shows percentages of the 2,322 receiving written warnings included whites in 13% of stops made, blacks 6%, Hispanics 9%, and Asians 16%. Who were arrested? Data shows percentages of the 1,403 arrested included whites in 5% of stops made, blacks in 10%, Hispanics in 6%, and Asians 3%. Searches of motorists. The report showed there were 1,713 searches of motorists conducted, roughly 8% of all stops. White motorists were searched in roughly 6% of all stops involving white motorists, black motorists in roughly 13% of all stops of black motorists, Hispanic motorists in roughly 8% of all stops of Hispanics, and Asians in roughly 4% of all stops involving Asian motorists. The report showed consent searches made up around 28% of the 1,713 searches, and whites and Hispanics were mostly likely to be searched based on consent, 29%. Blacks and Asians followed at 25% and 22%, respectively. Contraband was found in 51% of the searches conducted. Most frequently, the contraband seized was drugs, 55.9%. The discovery of contraband resulted in an arrest 24% of the time. This article is entitled Commentary. Chevron adds another piston to its oil shale engine. By Javier Blas, Bloomberg. Even after being outbid for Anadarko Petroleum in 2019, Chevron has expanded its position in the U.S. shale industry beyond the giant Permian Basin, probably at a lower cost than it would have paid for Anadarko. First, it was the $5 billion deal in 2020 to acquire Noble Energy. Second, on Monday, it announced a $6.3 billion deal to buy PDC Energy. Together, the two relatively small all-stock deals will transform Chevron into the largest oil and gas producer in the so-called Denver-Julesburg Shale Basin, which spreads across Colorado, Nebraska, and Wyoming. In Chevron speak, the DJ Basin adds another piston to its already strong shale engine. The location may surprise, because Colorado tends to fall under the radar of Wall Street, and the state is seen as more risky from a regulatory point of view than Texas or even New Mexico. Dig deeper, however, and the scale of the new business is evident. Almost out of the blue, the DJ Basin will become one of Chevron's top five assets in terms of production and free cash flow. If the deal closes by year-end as expected, Chevron would pump about 360,000 barrels of oil equivalent a day there, quickly approaching 400,000 barrels a day by 2024. In its much better known Permian location, it's pumping about 800,000 barrels a day. On the surface, the deal may look more opportunistic than strategic. Certainly, Chevron appears to have taken advantage of the fact that any oil company heavily exposed to Colorado tends to trade at a discount due to investor worries about environmental regulatory risk. PDC wasn't an exception, and Chevron has bought oil and gas reserves relatively cheap, paying about $7 a barrel for the inventory. The company expects the transactions are to be accretive to its shareholders immediately, adding about $1 billion in its annual free cash flow, a number that may go up as the synergies could be significantly larger than what Chevron indicated. From a business perspective, the question isn't why Chevron is buying, but why PDC is selling. Yet, there's a strategic angle to it, too. The purchase speaks volumes about the geographical and business shift ongoing in the U.S. shale industry. Of the five major American shale basins, two, where the revolution largely originated, are already past their prime. Production in the Bakken in North Dakota and the Eagle Ford in southern Texas has peaked. Another basin, the Anadarko-Woodford in Oklahoma, has probably peaked too. The oil game today is all about the Permian and the DJ basins. In both, Chevron is now one of the top producers. In expanding beyond the Permian into a second U.S. shale basin, Chevron is becoming even more American, quickly reversing its internationalization following the merger with Texaco about 2 decades ago, when it created mighty business units in far-flung locations like Australia and Kazakhstan. By next year, about 40% of the company's operating cash flow would come from pumping oil and gas from onshore and offshore fields in America, according to Citigroup. This article is entitled Legacy High School's Top 10 by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland ISD announced the class of 2023 top 10 students from Legacy High School. Graduation for Legacy will be 8:30 p.m. Thursday at Astound Stadium, 801 North Loop 250 West. Gates open at 7:15 p.m. Legacy High School Top 10. 1. Janik Bakta. 2. Kendall Harrington. 3. Zyra Briggs. 4. Malin Green. 5. Claire Hall. 6. Elizabeth Babel. 7. Cassie Bond. 9. Carissa Perez. 9. Bryson Baylor. 10. Yang Maui. Editor's note: see more coverage of the top students inside Midland County in editions this week and at MRT.com. This article is entitled Midland Police Search for Laundromat Arson Suspect by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward for any information that helps identify a woman that set an East Midland laundromat's restroom on fire. On May 12th, at about 8:14 p.m., a woman entered the Coin Laundry Wash at 1407 North La Mesa Road and set fire to the bathroom, causing damage to the building, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. If a person has information about the case, call the hotline. Go to www.694tips.com or use the mobile app P3 Tips. A person could earn a $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to an arrest. No caller ID is used, and callers will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case 230-512-04. This article is entitled New Laws Lay Groundwork for Electric Vehicle Growth by Mella McEwen. Among the record number of bills considered by Texas legislators this session, several are intended to set the stage for the growth of electric vehicles on Texas roads. With a week to go in the session, 2 EV-related bills have already been signed into law, and at least 2 are expected to receive final approval and head to the governor's desk in coming days. "We've made a lot of progress," Tom Smitty Smith, executive director of the Texas Electric Transportation Resource Alliance, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. "I'd like to thank the leaders, Governor Abbott, State Senator Charles Schwertner, State Representative Ken King, and others for taking this on and having the foresight to put a foundation in place before any problems occur." Texas seems to be following the legislative map put in place by 28 other states to ensure electrification proceeds smoothly. Senate Bill 1002 was recently signed into law with the intent of encouraging private investment in building out the charging station infrastructure. Under the legislation, public utilities would be prohibited from using ratepayer funds to build, own, and operate charging stations. They can still offer EV charging, but only through a separate subsidiary not funded by taxpayers. Also signed into law was SB 505, implementing a $400 fee for new electric vehicle owners to register their vehicles and a $200 annual fee for current owners renewing their registration. The fee was designed to replace the funds derived from gasoline taxes, and Smith said his organization would have preferred a system based on mileage driven. SB 1001, which requires charging stations to be regularly inspected by the same inspectors who inspect gasoline pumps, and also requires the equipment to display the cost of charging a vehicle, is headed to the Senate for concurrence with the House version. We expect it to advance quickly, Smith said. Still under consideration is SB 1732, which would ensure any publicly funded charging station in Texas uses plugs that are widely available, so everyone can have access to a plug that fits their vehicle. Up for debate in the Senate in the next few days is legislation that would allow state lands to be leased for charging stations. State parks, for example, said Smith. The Parks and Wildlife Commission could make money off the leases. And, he added, the charging stations would still charge for their use. Smith said most of the upgrades to electric infrastructure needed to accommodate the rise in electric vehicles aren't expensive, and the stuff we do all the time. If you build a convenience store, you add infrastructure. It's planning ahead. This article is entitled Odessa Police Share Timeline of Missing Teacher, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. The Odessa Police Department released new details on Tuesday on the missing case of 35-year-old Brittany Sawyer. Sawyer, an Ector County ISD teacher at Nimitz Junior High, was last seen on April 30th in Odessa. OPD shared a timeline on its Facebook page. April 25th. Sawyer left school early and went home. April 26th. Sawyer texted her supervisor she'd be out for the rest of the week. April 28th. Sawyer texted her supervisor she'd be out for another week. May 4th. ECISD did a welfare check and determined her home was vacant. May 10th, she was reported missing to Odessa police. There are many details in this case OPD can't release as to not hinder the investigation, OPD said in the Facebook post. Sawyer is described to be about 5'5", weighs approximately 130 pounds, and has blonde hair and blue eyes. According to OPD, Sawyer doesn't have a vehicle and is frequently seen walking. Anyone with information in reference to her whereabouts is encouraged to contact OPD at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-00053-67. This article is called Biz Buzz. It is entitled On-Demand Lawn Mowing to Start in Midland. Green Pal, an Uber-like lawn service, launches this week, by Ben Schaffer. Green Pal, an Uber-like on-demand lawn mowing service, is launching in Midland this week, according to a company press release. GreenPal's technology allows local pre-screened vendors to competitively bid on lawns, ensuring homeowners receive the best price for all their lawn care needs, the press release states. Homeowners can order contactless lawn care for same or next day service to stay out of the summer sun. GreenPal stated that more than 30% of their customers are over the age of 60. The company said this demographic greatly benefits from the added safety and convenience provided by the platform. Homeowners can list their lawns with their service date and lawn care needs. After lawn professionals bid on a property, the homeowner can select who they want to work with based on the vendor's rating, reviews, and price. Once a vendor has completed the service, the lawn care pro will send a time-stamped photo of their completed work. Homeowners can pay via the app. After successfully launching in 250 other markets, we are excited to help homeowners in Midland find reliable, safe, and local lawn care, co-founder Gene Caballero said in a press release. GreenPal stated that they currently operate in 48 states and 250 major markets, including Chicago, Houston, San Antonio, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, Detroit, and many more. Sign up online. yourgreen-pal.com/local/lawn-care-midland-tx. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Report, Intensity of Methane Declined, by Eric Roston, Bloomberg. The intensity of methane emissions from oil and gas production fell 28% between 2019 and 2021, among the industry's 100 biggest emitters. Greenhouse gas emissions intensity, which includes carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and methane, dropped 30%, according to an analysis of public data published today by the nonprofit's Clean Air Task Force and Ceres and ERM Group, Inc. The organization's goal in pursuing the study, the third annual version, is to make it easier to compare greenhouse gas emission data that regulated companies submit annually to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The oil and gas industry's CO2 emissions mostly come from burning fossil fuels during the production process or flaring methane, which converts methane to carbon dioxide. Methane is 81 times more powerful than CO2 in the medium term, 20 years. Methane intensity is a ratio of emissions and produced gas. Greenhouse gas intensity is calculated as each company's CO2, methane, CH4, and nitrous oxide, N2O emissions, divided by produced gas and its oil sales. This year's results reflect a decline in the total emissions reported to the EPA and an increase in oil and gas production. The authors hope their analysis of emissions intensity helps standardize reporting across the industry to make clearer who's emitting how much. For example, the report shows that Hilcorp Energy Company, a Houston-based oil and gas producer, is the top two emitter, behind ConocoPhillips, even though it's the 12th largest producer. Hilcorp produces half the oil and gas of the largest producer, ExxonMobil, and in 2021 put out 108% of the latter's emissions. Hilcorp increases its production mainly by buying aging oil and gas facilities, many of which can emit a lot before they're renovated. After acquisitions, the company invests in new infrastructure and equipment, thereby reducing emissions while raising output, said Nick Piatek, a Hilcorp spokesperson. He said it takes several years to update new production, and the new report only provides a nearly two-year-old snapshot. The sizable average emissions intensity decline from 2019 to 2021 masks annual fluctuations among companies and the basins they operate in, and also a growing gap between the polluters with the highest and lowest intensity. Companies in the top 25 have an average methane emissions intensity that's 26 times higher than those in the bottom quarter. For greenhouse gases, the top quarter's average emissions intensity is 13 times the bottom's quarter. Some companies are doing more on their own, which is great, said Leslie Feldman, research and analysis manager at Clean Air Task Force, and a report author. But not all companies will. And we need strong regulations to ensure that all companies throughout the whole industry are meeting the same basic standards. Nearly two-thirds of methane emissions is tied to a class of machines called pneumatic controllers, which manage pressures or temperatures in a production system, according to the report. The EPA in November issued a proposal that would lead to companies replacing this equipment with cleaner alternatives. Hillcorp removed 14,000 pneumatic devices in 2022, Piatek said. Nitrous oxide, which is a much smaller contributor to industry emissions, is 273 times stronger than CO2. In parsing the EPA data, the report leaves out unreported emissions that come from major leaks and emissions from smaller producers that emit less than the agency's annual threshold of 25,000 metric tons of CO2 or its equivalent in other greenhouse gases. Harder than compiling the data is attributing what causes changes year to year, company to company, region to region. Policy helps, Feldman said. The report notes several developments that may be helping reduce production-related emissions. The EPA last year proposed standards that may lead states to require regular leak detection and repair at all sites, special vigilance for detecting runaway emission events, or replace gas-emitting pneumatic controllers with newer, clean, and cost-effective alternatives. A provision of the Inflation Reduction Act, called the Methane Emissions Reduction Program, directs $1.55 billion to EPA emission reduction efforts. Another provision will charge regulated producers who pollute above a legal threshold. Those policies are sending a signal to operators that they need to clean up their act, Feldman said. This article is entitled Saudi Energy Minister Tells Speculators to Watch Out, by Francine Lacqua and Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia's top energy official issued another warning to oil short sellers just over a week before the OPEC Plus alliance is due to meet. Riyadh and its partners surprised crude traders last month by announcing output cutbacks intended to scare off speculators. Money managers have turned bearish again in recent weeks amid fears from a weaker global economy. I keep advising them that they will be ouching. They did ouch in April, Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman said at the Qatar Economic Forum in Doha on Tuesday. I would just tell them, watch out. Oil prices have fluctuated around $75 a barrel in London this month as traders weigh a positive outlook for demand against faltering economic data from China, risks of recession in the U.S., and a protracted battle over America's debt ceiling. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies, a 23-nation bloc known as OPEC Plus, will meet on June 3rd to 4th in Vienna, to review production policy for the second half of the year. While several delegates have said there's no need for further action now, as curbs already in place will help tighten global markets, Prince Abdulaziz has been known for orchestrating surprise interventions. The latest market data shows that short sellers, who initially fled after the shock OPEC Plus cutbacks were unveiled in early April, are making a comeback. Funds have turned the most bearish in more than a decade across a slew of oil contracts. The prince said OPEC's actions show it is a stabilizing force rather than engaged in price gouging, blaming market volatility on erroneous forecasts and policies among consuming nations, such as the release of stockpiles. This is the opinion column. It is entitled, Weigh In with Expectations for the Next City Manager, by Stuart Doreen, Midland Reporter-Telegram editor. This is a most unusual time in the city of Midland. There are four government entities with non-elected chief executives, and all four have or are making changes with their respective CEOs. Midland ISD went first and hired Stephanie Howard as its superintendent. Midland Health announced that Stephen Bowerman has taken over for Russell Myers as its CEO and president. Midland College is expected to announce its finalist for the position this week. That will leave the city of Midland as the lone entity looking. Again, this is an unusual time in Midland. It is not often that two executive changes are made in a six-month period, let alone four. And it is probably most appropriate that the city manager is the last to be filled. The city manager is the most different of the executives, as it answers to the most involved council/board of the four. Appointed by the city council, the city manager is the city's chief administrative officer, responsible for planning, managing operations, and leading a highly skilled city employee workforce to achieve goals established by the city council and consistent with the city's vision, mission, guiding principles, and priorities. That is what the job description states, and that is pretty accurate. What it doesn't state is that there are times when it feels like a city manager has seven different bosses and must deal with personality as much as policy. Former city manager Robert Patrick got a large dose of that to begin 2023. Thankfully, the Midland City Council appears to have progressed. Will that potential drama scare away quality candidates? I think there are between 245,000 and 367,000 reasons. The annual salary, according to the job description, that City of Midland will still find the person of quality, in-house or otherwise. Before the Midland City Council starts talking to candidates, the men and women on the board want to hear from you. There are links on the city's social media to a survey about what you want to see from a new city manager, those areas he or she should focus on, and proper qualifications. Again, city leaders want to hear from you. Still, be warned, this is not the same process as school district or other entities. In my opinion, a city manager is like a referee in sports. As long as that person does his or her job effectively, you might not hear his or her name that often. There is a reason that person sits literally at a lower level than the council. The council determines the path or destination, and the next city manager will drive the bus. One last thing. This Midland City Council has an opportunity to find their next person for the next decade. So give them some help on what this community needs for the long term. Set a tone that the council will follow with the selection of the right person who can handle personalities from the council and staff level. Our residents and city staff should provide good guidance for all council members that leadership and a vision matter. And so does city staff. And a city manager should be picked who can work with all council members, including the ultimate micromanager, a more reserved board member, and everyone in between. Good luck on finding the right person. This is the obituary column. Wednesday, May 24th. Billy Wayne Williams. Billy Wayne Williams, age 74, died peacefully at home in Del Valle, Texas, on May 18th, surrounded by family and friends, after a long battle with Parkinson's disease. Billy was born in Palestine, Texas, and raised in Austin. Billy was predeceased by his brother Larry Lee Williams, who died in 1967 in the Vietnam War, and numerous other family members. Billy is survived by his wife, Joanna Williams, daughter Kristen Mishler, grandson Babe Mishler, and his wife Carissa Mishler, brother-in-law Leslie Steger, and his wife Patricia Steger, brother-in-law Gary Steger, and his wife Susan Steger, first cousin Charles Hafer, and his wife Betty Hafer, and a host of aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Visiting is scheduled for Tuesday, May 23rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Harrell Funeral Home at 4435 Frontier Trail, Austin, Texas, 78745. Services will be held at 3 p.m. on Wednesday, May 24th, at Palm Valley Lutheran Church at 2500 East Palm Valley Road, Round Rock, Texas, 78665. Fellowship and light meals served following interment. Patricia Patty Ball. Patricia Patty Ball, 86, of Midland, passed away May 18th. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 25th, at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, May 26th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Patty was born on May 25, 1936, in Mangan, Oklahoma, to George and Opal Pig. She met and married Jerry Ball in July of 1964. They spent 58-plus years together until her passing. Patty is survived by her husband Jerry and two sons, Greg and Zane. Greg and his family reside in Syracuse, Utah. Zane and his family reside in Portland, Oregon. There are a total of 8 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Patty was preceded in death by her parents, George and Opal Pig, and her sister, Suzanne Vaughn. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Miguel Angel Gonzalez Martinez. Baby Miguel Angel Gonzalez Martinez passed away peacefully on May 18th. Miguel was born February 6, 2023, in Odessa. Though his time with his family was short, he touched many lives and was loved deeply by those around him. He is survived by his parents, Miguel Angel Gonzalez and Novia Rosa Martinez, paternal grandparents Jose Jorge Gonzalez Gutierrez, Maria Francisca Cruz de Gonzalez, paternal grandparents Jose Manuel Martinez Orellano, and Dominga Miranda Gomez. A visitation will be held from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. on Wednesday, May 24th, at Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, May 25th at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, May 20th. No goals while evaluating methane technology, so says a panel. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Oil and gas companies are facing a sea of technologies related to methane emissions. From ground-level sensors to drones, helicopters to planes, these technologies promise to monitor, identify, quantify, and pinpoint methane emissions. Helping companies sort through the various choices was the topic of a panel discussion at the Permian Basin Environmental Regulatory Seminar presented by Midland College's Petroleum Professional Development Center and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. Quote, "It depends on what you want to accomplish," said Seth Long, President and Chief Executive Officer at Shepherd Safety Systems. Jennifer Jenny Blackledge, Business Development Manager, Emissions Monitoring with Champion X, agreed, saying companies need to know what their goal is, what they want to quantify. Quote, "My best advice is to be open-minded, give technology a try, and don't be afraid to collect your data. Be open-minded on your operations," she said. Long agreed, saying companies should take time to evaluate technology and keep an open mind. However, he cautioned, quote, "Don't be too late," end quote. That's because methane regulations are an ever-changing situation, whether in Texas or New Mexico, he said, quote, "Especially for smaller operators, be proactive. It's coming," he said. The reasoning for monitoring for emissions varies from the larger operators wanting to be environmentally conscious and keep their license to operate, to smaller operators wanting to keep as much natural gas in the pipeline as possible to sell and generate returns, said Long. Quote, "Just try the technology. That's what we encourage," said Blackledge. "Once you see the data and analyze your operations, that's where efficiency comes in," end quote. Both Long and Blackledge noted that their companies are constantly learning ways to make their technology perform better and more efficiently. They're also talking with clients about their needs, their goals, and how their respective companies can better meet those needs and goals. Quote, "What you see on the market now is not what will be on the market a year from now," Blackledge said. One questioner expressed fear not only that the current administration was trying to shut down oil and gas, but would use such data against the industry. Quote, "That's why we need to keep doing what we're doing. The folks that use optical gas imaging cameras and post videos on YouTube give us a bad name. That's why we need to continue doing this. We need to work together. For companies, it's important to continue having that equipment so you can keep the data and rebut those folks," said Long. Blackledge said she has heard such fears multiple times, but efforts to reduce methane emissions and intensity made the world a better place, she said. Quote, "There are two sides. One side says we should have no oil and gas, and the other side says we should have no regulations. They're both wrong. It's on us. It's our job to come together and educate communities and regulators. It's not an either-or situation. If you take away oil and gas, millions will die. The impact on the world is huge," she said. New produced water platform to use AI. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Artificial intelligence is arriving in the produced water management sector. Infinity Water Solutions and Quantum Reservoir Impact have announced a strategic partnership to develop, deploy, and advance a water intelligence platform called Speedwise Water, an artificial intelligence and machine learning software designed to standardize, categorize, and appraise water, most notably the produced and treated produced water coming from the energy sector. Quote, "Data is only as good as the tools you have to make sense of that data," said Michael Dyson, Infinity's chief executive officer. "We can build a tool that takes the data and makes sense of it," end quote. Nansen C. Saleri, chairman and chief executive officer of QRI, stated in an announcement of the partnership, quote, "Infinity and QRI are a powerful combination. the coupling of our complementary skill sets, intel, technology, and teams have resulted in a truly impressive platform. Together, we can deliver far more positive outcomes towards sustainability and clean energy than either company individually. The fact that we can help the value appreciation of wastewater through AI and superior engineering makes it even more exciting, end quote. Without quality data, quote, we don't know how valuable that water is for fracturing, agriculture use, or if it's toxic and needs to be disposed of in the subsurface, said Zach Hildebrand, who will be joining Infinity June 1st as Chief Scientific Officer. He currently is a research professor at the University of Texas at El Paso's Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry. Speedwise will have remote sensors capturing information from production sites and relaying that information into its platform, he said. As more data points are collected, it becomes even more powerful, he added. Demonstrating a beta version of Speedwise, Hildebrand showed how it can take a cluster of wells, the particular wells being shown were in New Mexico, and through AI, predict how much water the wells would produce, how much of that water would be needed for fracturing projects, and the constituents found in that water. Quote, we can commoditize that water, generate a marketplace, he said. That should bring down costs for both the companies that gather and dispose of water and those sourcing water, said Dyson. This goes beyond ESG, environment, social, and governance, but to sustainability, he continued. The platform will also offer legislators and regulators and academicians the tools they need to advance beneficial reuse of produced water, Dyson said. Quote, we're still on the cusp of beneficial reuse, said Hildebrand. We don't have permitting because they don't have standards. I hope we can hand our data to regulators and water consortiums and say, quote, here's the standards so they can put regulations in place, end quote. He added that he has seen Permian Basin operators treat produced water to a level less toxic than the standards for drinking water in El Paso. Dyson said the platform will democratize information so any stakeholder at any level will know the value of the produced water, enhancing purchasing power. He cited the example of cotton farmers seeking water to irrigate their crops. Water treatment companies can use the information to optimize their processes. Solutions to the vast amount of produced water exist to turn what is considered a waste product, a liability, into an asset. Quote, Speedwise is a critical component that furthers things that are impossible now, Dyson said. This pulls together technologies and makes them work smoothly. The status quo is not sustainable, end quote. Vital, Northern Oil, teamed to buy Forge Energy assets. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Vital Energy continued on the acquisition path that started in February with a Midland Basin acquisition. The company has agreed to acquire the assets of Forge Energy 2 Delaware, an NCAP portfolio company. This time, Vital was joined by Northern Oil and Gas in the deal. Under the agreement, Vital will acquire 70% of the assets for $378 million and will operate the assets. Northern will acquire a 30% stake for $162 million and will participate in development pursuant to cooperation and joint operating agreements with Vital. The assets are primarily located in Ward and Reeves counties and include approximately 10,200 net acres, 30.5 net producing wells, 2.3 net wells in process, and about 20 low break-even net undeveloped locations. Quote, "This accretive acquisition is attractively priced and significantly expands Vital Energy's Permian focus, adding a core operating area in the Delaware Basin," said Jason Pigott, Vital President and Chief Executive Officer, in a statement announcing the agreement. Continuing the quote, "We have a proven track record of building value through a disciplined acquisition strategy. Today's deal significantly enhances our outlook for free cash flow generation, which we will use to pay down debt and strengthen our balance sheet," end quote. For Minneapolis-based Northern Oil, quote, "This transaction crystallizes NOG's position as a reliable and consistent partner for the purchase and development of high-quality properties," commented Nick O'Grady, NOG's chief executive officer, in a statement announcing its participation in the acquisition. Quote, "We are excited to work alongside our partners at Vital to develop the Forge assets with strong alignment and cooperation," end quote. Quote, "As we enter into this joint acquisition, we are taking NOG's capabilities and opportunity set to the next level, adding yet another arrow to our M&A quiver," commented Adam Durlam, NOG's president. Quote, "The Forge assets are high quality with the opportunity for clear and concise development to deliver the consistent performance our investors have come to expect," end quote. The acquisition will expand Vital's Permian Basin leasehold to about 198,000 net acres and establish core operating positions in Pecos, Reeves, and Ward counties. It will also add approximately 100 high-value oil locations in the 2nd and 3rd Bone Spring and Wolfcamp A formations, with an average break-even oil price of approximately $50 a barrel, with potential upside in additional stacked formations. Vital plans to operate one rig on the acquired properties, increasing the Permian Basin rig count to 3 rigs.
This is the Dear Abby column. Jilted wife hesitant to give second chance. Dear Abby, I married a recovering addict, and for years he did great. We made a lovely home and family together. Then one of my husband's drug buddies, a woman, resurfaced. My husband had an affair, went down that nasty road again, and did some very cruel things to destroy our marriage. We have been married 19 years and separated for the last 3, with a divorce pending. My husband now wants to make amends. He's in a rehab program, but I'm reluctant. We have been on a few dates, and I have real concerns about what will happen when we run into the other woman. I asked her at least 6 times to go away and stay away. How should I expect him to react when we run into her? She's deeply embedded in his social circle, far more than I ever was, because I don't care for the debauchery lifestyle. He promises he has cut ties with everyone in that circle. But I know it's only a matter of time until we run into her. Signed, Angry and Hurt in Georgia. Dear Angry, you are rightfully hurt and angry, but if reconciling is going to work out well, it's important you're assured that he still isn't carrying a torch for her. You would be wise and less confrontational if you ask your almost ex-husband how he plans to react should he encounter her, rather than dictate how he should do it. He's in rehab and trying to rebuild his life after the mess he made of it. I see no reason to create a scene if your paths cross. A courteous hello and goodbye should suffice. Dear Abby, I am a 57-year-old male. I have no children, and I was forced to move back in with my mother to start my life over again. I divorced my wife because she was cheating. I have a cousin from Alabama who is 30. I love her dearly. She's my favorite cousin, and I have begun having feelings for her. I think it may be my body's way of telling me it wants to procreate and leave a legacy. I feel guilty about these thoughts and feelings. In my heart, I believe they are shameful. These thoughts are something I must take to my grave and never act upon. But the urge is growing stronger, and it's becoming a losing battle. Telling her, or anyone else in my family, my true feelings would be a terrible thing for me to do. Can you please help me rid myself of these feelings for her? I will take any advice into consideration. Signed, Ashamed in Tennessee. Dear Ashamed, in some, not all, states, marriage between cousins is legal. Tennessee and Alabama happen to be two of them. Your cousin may be 27 years younger, but at 30 she's a grown woman. Do you have any indication of whether your feelings are reciprocated? Sometimes the feelings we suppress only make them grow stronger. A way to resolve this would be to express them. If your cousin doesn't share your affection, bear in mind that not all women are cheaters, as your wife was, and start to build a new life while you look for a suitable companion in your community. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.